Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy!
Hi there, welcome back to my eighth COVID catch-up. In the communication domain, it's been an interesting week watching some of the debate about schools and whether they should reopen. This is something that is planned in the United Kingdom for around the beginning of June. Alistair Munro and Saul Faust have written an article in Archives of Disease of Childhood arguing that schools do need to open because the harms occurring from children not being at school are outweighing some of the risks of them returning. They argue, and this is some of the data that we presented in the Missing Link article on Don't Forget the Bubbles, that transmission in children does seem to be much less significant than in adults. It's not that it's not there, but it's likely if schools go back in a managed way, there isn't going to be huge transmission of COVID. Now, the communication challenge here is not about the science, but I think as healthcare professionals, we need to remember that we've been living and breathing quite literally, I suppose, COVID for the last couple of months. But if you're a member of the public, and if you're a teacher in particular, who may have only heard about COVID from the news, I get that actually your fears about going back to work are extremely valid. You've seen a lot of news reports about the impact on the adult population. You've seen some very mixed reports about how it may spread. And I can see that there would be quite legitimate concern about returning to school if you don't feel that there is safe enough provision either to socially distance or that the disease has run its course enough that there isn't going to be either a second peak, which there still may well be, or that you're going to be significantly at risk of catching the disease yourself. And I suppose as healthcare professionals, we need to be mindful of this in the debates that we're having, is that we have some knowledge that is inherent to us in our daily lives, which others may not have. Now, my personal belief is that I think we do need to move forward with opening schools in a structured and managed way, because we're never going to be able to open up anything at all if we don't. But how that debate occurs and how the healthcare professional liaise with the teaching and education profession, I think is going to be really important. And perhaps we need to avoid kind of ding-dong debates on social media about this. And it was really good to see the Children's Commissioner come in and say, actually, we need to stop some of this petty fighting because the important thing is the health of children. And their health may be significantly damaged if we delay just because we can't come to an agreement, rather than there being a sensible way forward, and that it's something that we could do but are prevented from doing because of petty bureaucracy or people feeling that they've been slighted in some way. That would be a real shame. I hosted a webinar this week on behalf of Don't Forget the Bubbles. We had a number of delegates talking, I suppose, about the next phases of the COVID crisis. How are we going to move forward as emergency departments and assessment units in managing the pandemic over the summer and into the winter? It's really nice to hear a number of the panelists talking about how proud they were of their staff, quite openly. Might sound a bit glib, but I think it's important that we recognise the pressures that our staff have been under. And we acknowledge that this has not been an easy period. In the same way, I think we support our staff through winter, but I think this has been very prolonged with a great deal of uncertainty. I think it's important that units, departments, organisations all understand that this is a very difficult and challenging times. And I think false platitudes are not particularly useful, but acknowledging where there has been significant turmoil, but that has been overcome or addressed, or that new processes have come out of old ones in a successful fashion, We really do need to acknowledge those and make sure that people understand that their efforts are not going unnoticed. In relation to vital signs and interventions, there's nothing particularly new in the literature about COVID in children from the last week, other than for this new pediatric inflammatory condition, which is now being increasingly described. Some unpeer-reviewed work from France supports some of the clinical features and blood shown in the paper released from the UK's London transport network. Children presented with persistent fever. There were often GI symptoms, inflammatory markers being raised with a median CRP of 219. Troponins were up 136 and D-dimers a mean of 4,700 and so. This has promoted some debate about the utility of these tests and when they should be done. I think it is important that this condition does make children unwell, and I don't think that these blood tests, especially kind of troponins and D-dimers, which are not commonly performed in primary care or indeed even normally in secondary care, should be just taken to rule out this disease process. You've got to have a child who is unwell, has had a really persistent fever, and doesn't really have an obvious cause for their disease process. Clearly, though, for an intensive care clinician or someone experienced, these bloods could be extremely valuable because they may make the difference between whether some early kind of interventions or treatments are started. And from this particular French study, that there was some coronary artery dilatation in 5 out of the 17 cases. Interestingly, no aneurysms were seen in that particular cohort. And so we watch and wait to see how this disease process grows. In the French study, that 7 out of the 17 were tested positive on swabs, but 15 out of 17 had positive serology. And that accords with some feedback that I've known has come out from the UK about serology being far more likely to be positive than the actual swab results, leading to this feeling that this is a post-inflammatory condition. And we can but watch and wait to see if this has been an isolated spike or represents, I suppose, COVID infection in the community. And I suppose as more children become infected, will we see more of these children presenting with this post-inflammatory condition? And finally, the dilemma, I suppose, for this week. Well, a lot of the webinar was spent discussing how we would deal with waiting rooms, and that sounds like a pretty mundane topic. But a number of departments have split areas into suspected COVID and non-suspected areas. And currently, while that is challenging for some organisations because they haven't got a great deal of space, it's been manageable because of the low patient caseload. As we move out of the summer into the winter, we are likely to be less in lockdown, and we are likely, because of the weather, to see emerging other infectious diseases, so bronchiolitis, etc., and maybe metapneumovirus, which we know drives a lot of wheeze/asthma. And so we are going to have a problem in terms of being able to socially distance effectively, both in the non-suspected and suspected groups. And I don't think there were any particularly easy answers to this. The solutions are not immediately apparent in how we deal with increased presentations with sometimes less staff and significantly less space. And I think one of the things that we're going to need to do over the summer period especially, i.e. the next couple of months, is work out some stratagem for how we actually keep children from coming to the emergency department. Clearly that has been a long-standing challenge and comes with risks of its own. What we do with children when they arrive, but I suppose most importantly, how we keep flow going through the hospital, so from emergency departments and assessment units up to the wards, or how we discharge even more effectively than we already do in pediatrics to make sure that when children are arriving who do need a hospital bed and are suspected, that they can be moved out of one area into another as soon as possible. And maybe this is something I can look back on over the next couple of weeks as more solutions arrive. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks always for listening.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.